I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, March 17th, 2017. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present today, Vice Chair Senator Coghill, Senator Meyer, Senator Hughes, Senator Wilkowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. Senator von Imhoff is on other state business today, and we are joined by Senator Dunleavy. Welcome. Thanks to Ann and Kyle, who are recording the minutes and keeping the audio for us. So today we have one item on the agenda, and that's a presentation on a proposal to bring natural gas to the interior and other parts of the state. So we're hearing this proposal at the request of Senator Dunleavy. We have former mayors Roger Purcell and Vern Ruprecht here, as well as Dave Nuffer. So if the presenters would come forward, I'm not sure who exactly is presenting, but welcome. Senate Bill 23, as you recall, members of the committee, passed in 2013, and that proposed to move natural gas by truck from the North Slope to Fairbanks. Senate Bill 50, which passed in 2015, expanded the scope of ADA to look at other basins for sources of gas, such as Cook Inlet. Since the passage of that bill, this committee has been awaiting an update from the administration, which will be coming later this session. In the meantime, we have several proposals of different methods to convey natural gas to the interior, and what we'll hear is one of those today. So, gentlemen, welcome. If you would introduce yourselves for the record, and go ahead and begin your presentation. All committee members have it.
Thank you, Chair. We appreciate the former Mayor Roger Purcell, and I appreciate you, Senator Dunleavy, and the Chair and the rest of the committee for allowing us your time. I know it's very precious in that. This is a very important issue for not just the city of Houston and the Massey Valley, but it's an issue that goes further than that. It goes statewide. And this, when we go through our presentation to you, I think you'll see that this has a greater impact for everybody in the state. And so I'm going to, we have two changes just a little bit on our presentation, and it's our guests here. I'll let them introduce themselves. They're actually going to be giving the presentation because they have the technology, the technological, and that to make this whole thing more than I can for you. So I don't want to get in there and then not know what I'm talking about. So these guys are the experts, and I'll turn it over to them at this time. And thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for your time. My name is Edward Woods with Dresser Rand Siemens, and I will be presenting, and I'll let Andre introduce himself. He'll be advancing the slides for me and answering technical questions as well.
Hello, Andre Gonthier from North Star Industries at Liberty Permit Energy Infrastructure Fund.
What is being proposed is LNG for Alaska, and the key statement is we're supporting the statewide transition from imported diesel to domestic energy for the state. Comparing natural gas to diesel, natural gas is domestic versus imported diesel. We see natural gas as being cost-effective and with low emissions compared to diesel. You'll see that on the slide on the graph to the right. From a particulate emission standpoint, virtually zero when compared to coal and diesel. And the key statement I'd like to make with this slide is that the technology is to densify that natural gas is available today. So as a level set, I'd like to share what is LNG. LNG is liquefied natural gas. And as a point of reference, you're taking, say, a beach ball worth of natural gas, chilling it to minus 260 degrees and putting it into the volume of a ping pong ball. It's in its liquid state. It's densified. It can be easily transported, and at the point of use can be revaporized and brought back into its natural gas state for use in natural gas engines, cooking and heating appliances. From a safety, LNG is safe. It's non-flammable in its liquid state, and with that, one could put a lit cigarette into the LNG without creating a fire. It requires a high intense spark. One could drop, as I heard today from a peer, an Oreo cookie could be dropped into a glass of LNG, brought out, and eaten. It's non-toxic. It vaporizes. Can be also be put on top of water, and when that vaporizes, can be drunk as well. Next slide. So what I'm here to talk about really is the technology and the development. The technology to liquefy is with Siemens Technology, originally Dresser Rand, and we have a modular gas liquefaction facility. It's modular. We utilize the modular format for gas cleanup, for power generation, for liquefaction, and then that liquid gets taken into storage and dispensing, and we're proposing into ISO storage tanks. I'll talk about that later. But bottom line, it's a scalable platform. Each system, each LNGO system, such as what you see on the bottom of this this slide, is an LNGO system that consumes a 100-foot by 100-foot footprint. And that can be deployed and make first liquids within 1 year of papers being signed. And the system will produce 30,000 gallons per day. And as the need for LNG increases, we add more modules. From an engineering development and operation standpoint, Dresser Rand has a relationship with North Star Industries out of Boston. And North Star Industries is a leader in natural gas and LNG. Natural gas in the form of metering and manifolding natural gas, compressor stations, and so forth. And on the LNG side, they're experts in looking at that operation that's being proposed and looking at the dispersion models and safeties and related for the site development, as well as the cryo equipment needed for the hoses to load the ISO containers. North Star Industries is 51% owned by Liberty Energy Trust, an energy equity firm. And they are looking at projects such as this proposed development for private investment for the whole project. Let's talk about the location. Houston, we see as the ideal location. There's 1,000 acres that are zoned industrial, heavy industrial, appropriate for what we're doing. And I'm going to sidebar just for a moment, talking about the LNGO system, the modular gas liquefaction system. It's quiet and low emissions. Quiet in that probably my voice and the communication via the speaker system is louder than that LNGO system in operation, 72 dBAs at 3 feet. Low emissions in that it's a half-gram engine that's driving and powering the site. No emissions from the gas in that the gas that comes in is cleaned up, and that gas that's clean goes into the liquefaction, so it's a high-purity methane. Great for engines, and allows a stable operation of that engine over time. What do we do with the tail gases that we consume that in the power generation and burn that in the half-gram engines? There's no venting, no flaring of that technology. Back to the location of Houston, we're looking at utilization of a portion of that 1,000 acres that's zoned for heavy industrial. There's a rail siding that's adjacent to that, and we're looking at utilizing that rail for transport, and I'll get into that on a later slide. The gas is targeted to come from multiple sources. We're looking at a couple of firms that are operating in the Cook Inlet area, as well as some local coal bed methane resources on the property and adjacent to it. From a transportation, I talked about the rail, but that does not take away from the availability of that road access, where LNG can be put on trailers and distributed out. Talking of transportation, we look to see the Alaska Rail as the primary starting point of that LNG dispersal out to the market. We look at it in terms of utilizing Houston as a hub and Alaska Rail as being the primary spoke, getting that gas out to market. Going north to Fairbanks, we're looking at Fairbanks as a storage. We can support the Fairbanks Phase 1 and 2 expansion. Phase 1 expansion is targeted to be has been communicated to be a billion cubic feet per year. That's approximately 30,000 gallons a day, which is appropriate to one LNGO system. And then Fairbanks, I'm going to go back a little bit. My life previously was with Caterpillar, 18 years on the power generation side. And with that, there's a deep understanding that those diesel engines and lives depend upon those diesel engines for creating power and keeping people warm in the wintertime. So with that, we're looking at putting a second LNGO unit into this project for a sense of redundancy and availability of a secondary fuel source in the event that components need to be brought down on, say, Unit 1 for service and maintenance, ensuring an availability of LNG. So we're talking about taking the LNG north to Fairbanks, using that rail as the primary spoke, and supporting Fairbanks with their Phase 1, Phase 2 expansion to allow additional customers on that gas network, but also use that as a hub to take LNG out via the road spokes out to remote communities and remote mines. We can also do that by taking that on the rail south to the ports of Whittier and Seward and put that on a marine vessel and distribute that to remote communities and mines, whether it's at the beach or whether it needs to be distributed on a road from the beach. How are we going to get it there? We're utilizing, and I'll step back just a moment, Hitachi has been very instrumental, and we have a representative here for questions should they arise. With Hitachi has been very instrumental in supporting the development of utilizing ISO format containers for LNG tanks. Hitachi has been supporting the distribution of LNG by rail in Japan for over 30 years. They're taking that experience and bringing it here to Alaska. And having, I cover the whole U.S. for Dresser Rand with the LNG, and I'm very fortunate to be a part of helping support Alaska in just being the leader in getting LNG distributed by rail. I welcome this opportunity to see this to be the model for the rest of the U.S. so we can implement this elsewhere within the U.S. How is that LNG going to be used? We talked about Fairbanks as one potential consumer. And with that, we also look at utilizing it in the form of generating power. As I stated earlier, the diesel engines are dependent upon, and they're the lifeblood within the community. It's a trusted source. It's an insurance policy. It's a nice warm blanket where people can go to sleep at night. And we understand that. Earlier in this week, we talked to some energy managers that are representing upwards of 80 villages and communities within the state. We listen to them in the form of a voice of customer, if you will. And with that, we're proposing utilizing Dresser Rand Microgrid Services from Germany, has expressed an interest, to participate in helping better integrate the natural gas power generation systems as a side-by-side with the diesel generator sets, leaving that diesel generator set as an insurance policy, if you will, and demonstrating the capability of a natural gas power generation setup until such comfort is available and demonstration is done, performed, that LNG can be a continued source of energy to those communities. And to better utilize that natural gas molecule, we're also proposing that where appropriate, the hot water can be taken off of those engines and utilized in a combined heat and power format, heating community buildings, schools, and so forth, and also be integrated into supporting clean water and sewage treatment plants in those communities. Relative to expansion of that natural gas within the community, once LNG is available, and that allows now the opportunity to run a distribution network, a gas line, if you will, around that community so people can put natural gas heating and natural gas cooking into their houses and business operations. Speaking of business, industry, how would they benefit? What we're looking at is utilization of natural gas for mines and fisheries and forestry within the community. Diesel prices are volatile, and they're very high on a relative basis to natural gas and LNG. And with that, I look at it, and coming from a welding shop in Montana supporting the mining industry, I see that maybe a mine is looking at shuttering because diesel prices are too high. Stable natural gas prices, lower natural gas prices for energy could have the potential to support a mine to extend the life of that mine. If there is a mine that's looking to employ people in the state of Alaska to utilize the resources, and maybe they're being held back because of high diesel prices, this may present that opportunity to bring that mine in earlier, bringing more employment into the state. And we propose with that power generation for the communities the use of a Yanmar natural gas generator set, 35 kilowatts in output, that can be utilized in the smaller communities, and on the larger side for the large communities and the industries, the Dresser Rand Guascor generator set. In a quick summary, I'd like to communicate that the technology is available and that there's this wonderful hub-and-spoke system with a prime location based in Houston, which has cost-effective rail to transport that LNG throughout the state for leading to a good demand for the domestic energy within the state. Let's have an efficient use of that energy. The benefits are economic. It can be a health benefit to that as well, reducing the soot and particulate that's coming off of the diesel engines, and to have fewer emissions with the natural gas generator sets. From an environmental standpoint, by going over to natural gas, that's reducing the opportunity for environmental impact versus diesel. So I would like to communicate that the pieces are in place, and we ask for your support in the statewide transition to from imported diesel to the domestic fuel of natural gas. And I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you for your presentation. Committee members, questions? Senator Dunleavy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, what are you asking from the state? Are you asking for funding? Are you asking for tax credits? What would the state need to do to facilitate a project such as this?
I'll ask Andre to answer that, please.
We are not asking for financial support at this time. We believe that with the right contracts, we can turn this in as established and as proposed as a private investment opportunity and keep it at such. We may, as we firm up our business plan, evaluate and look into any tax benefits that are available, but we're not asking for any special treatment at this time. And what we see as the real benefit, other than what my colleague has said, is if we can reduce the cost of diesel, our use of diesel, we're reducing the subsidies. If we can come in with a lower cost natural gas, then I think we're going to enhance the lives of the residents of Alaska.
Further questions? Senator Coghill.
So it looks like some of this is contingent upon road access and rail access. And so those are things that the state somehow gets involved in. What has been your conversation with either DOT or the railroad at this time for the access into this area? Because it looks like you would have to have some completion on that.
So whoever it is that is answering, if you could identify yourself orally for the record, the secretary will record that, but people are listening as well. Thank
All
you.
Right, thank you. Edward Woods, Dresser Rand. To my knowledge, to the project, there is a railroad siding adjacent to the property. And I believe in your packet there is a letter from the Alaska Railroad that has expressed interest in supporting this project. And so relative to road access, our primary distribution of that LNG is through railroad. And so road access to the site is primarily going to be the, I'll use the word importation, or the bringing in of the equipment, with the primary distribution of rail of the LNG north and south. And I believe I'd like to add to that, and that is in supporting of the expansion of the Fairbanks natural gas expansion, phase one, phase two. With this proposal, there would be zero additional trucks going onto the road transporting LNG from the south north to Fairbanks. Did I answer your question?
Follow-up, Senator Coghill?
Thank you. No, that's one of the things we talked about in my office was just the fact that the railroad is already working on it, but that there would be a completion factor. So then the other thing is you cited you have multiple sources of gas. What's your – just for us to know, we've talked with our folks that are trying to get gas in North, that the gas supply has been one of the question marks. So how far have you gone down in that road to get supply of gas?
Would you like to answer that?
Sure. Andre Gonthier. We have had a meeting with Hillcorp, the pipeline transmission company. So we've had negotiations with them on rate. We're not complete. We're still progressing. We've had discussions with other landholders that hold rights to the coal bed methane. Again, early on, but we've had discussions with them.
Because we've had, Madam Chair, we've had the Interior Energy Project talk to us, and they always talk about gas supply and contracts are imminent. But that's been going on for several months, and I just thought that's going to be one of the tougher points to get. You're going to have access to a pretty good volume of gas to get it liquefied. And so, and if I could ask a couple more questions.
Yes, follow-up. Senator Coghill.
Actually, I like the idea of private investors. Good on you. Go. In fact, I think I would like to see private money get into this. But there's also, you talked about the ISO containers. Tell me what the market is now. I'm just trying to get a realistic view of what's available now. What is your lead time to, say, get something that it looks like a railroad could carry? And then what we're going to have to do is compare the cost of storage of diesel over against the cost of storage of gas. So kind of give me a context to that.
Edward Woods with Dresser Rand. And I will do my best to answer that question. So we are looking at, as I stated earlier, an approximate one-year lead time from signing of the project to first liquids. From a demand side, we see phase one expansion of Fairbanks plus mining and village demand to support two 30,000 gallon apiece LNGO systems for a total of 60,000 gallons per day production. And from an ISO container standpoint, I will probably look to Greg with Hitachi, but I will say that in communication with Hitachi and the ISO containers, upon signing of the project, in addition to preparing the ground, getting the iron in place, storage tanks and such, working with the railroad to get that completed, which all is very achievable within that time frame stated, would be working with Hitachi to ensure sufficient ISO containers are available to support LNG needs.
Follow-up, Senator Coghill?
So I think that's great. Then you're moving them several times, so you're going to bring them in on so they have to be ported in, I would be my guess. Would they come in on the Port McKenzie?
Edward Woods, Dresser Rand. And so relative to bringing in the equipment and the ISO tanks to transfer the LNG, it would be brought up by barge, most likely from Port of Seattle, and that would be brought into Port of Whittier, Port of Seward, and then either by rail or truck. The LNGO equipment, most likely by truck, brought to the job site. From the ISO container standpoint, that would be brought from Asia, where Hitachi is based and have manufacturing operations, brought in by barge. And I believe that would be Port of Seward or Port of Whittier, what would be put on rail and brought to the job site. And I would add one more, if I may, and that would be storage at the facility. It would be appropriate to doing our best to help have enough storage to support the seasonal demand swings. And no storage volume has been identified yet, but that would be a function of North Star Industries and their analysis work for the project. And if Andre has any other comments, I'd welcome those.
Andre Gonthier, North Star Industries. Excuse me. I would add that in our conversations with FNG earlier this week, we discussed a plan where when we create this energy center in Houston and we have LNG storage on our site, that it may very well make sense to help them with their five-day storage requirement to have space in our tank so that there aren't two entities or a project, so to speak, isn't going to build two tanks. There may be a small one at the north end of the rail, but it would make much more sense to have one field-directed tank at the hub, as we've been discussing, so that the volumes that they asked us about were significant, much larger than the ISO container. So it wouldn't make sense to expect them to have that five-day storage just stacking up those containers. So it would be better to have it more economical in a larger vessel.
Follow-up, Senator Coghill.
The nice thing is we don't have to figure the nuts and bolts of the sense of it because a private investor gets to figure that out. We're just trying to get a sense of the reality of it. And
sure,
if you're willing to take the risk, put it out there, I think I'm game. So then the other thing that you said, and I liked the idea of having these generator sets, but you also work for Caterpillar. So
yes,
give
sir.
Us an idea in concept. Are they even within the range, because you're talking about a whole different storage set plus a whole new generator set, supply chain, service capacity. Is that something that is easily gotten to by the market?
From this Edward Woods dresser rant, so if I understand your question, it's relative to the service, maintenance, and support of the systems. The answer is service, maintenance, support is in place. And more to the point on the Yanmar generator set, and having been with Caterpillar Corporate for 18 years, I will express my I'm impressed with the Yanmar generator set. And I say that in the context that the Yanmar generator set is a one-year service interval. So with the startup of a Yanmar generator set, it can run 1 year before it needs to be taken down for an oil change and a spark plug change. That's in comparison to a larger generator set, whether it's a 1 megawatt natural gas generator set, such as what Dresser Rand offers, or similar technology that Caterpillar or other manufacturers provide, which is taking that system down every 1,000 hours for oil change, spark plug change. And so with the smaller, very remote communities, that one-year service interval is ideal. It can be at a time of convenience, at a point of low use, where that system can be brought down for the oil change with minimal or no impact to that community. On the larger side, with the larger generator sets, those configurations are going to be in an N plus one configuration, meaning the number of generator sets that are needed plus one that can be brought down for service, spare, and otherwise. From a service standpoint, relative to Dresser Rand, Dresser Rand has field service personnel based throughout the state and have rapid dispatch to support. We have a service team in the state that takes care of combustion turbines up on the slope and have been known to respond within 1 day to be on site and working on that equipment. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, I thought that was helpful. And one last question, then I'll shut up. It sounds like the John Cogill question hour. But having natural gas in Alaska has been great, but it's been painful for the interior. There's no doubt about it, because we live between two gas fields. So trying to get a secure supply that is not the last in and first out is going to be always a problem for us. FNG has a contract right now. Are you in direct competition with them? Are you in some kind of synergy with gas delivery? How do I see a relationship with this, what's already happening? And I'm only trying to get a context. I don't care if you come in and compete and make them bring their prices down, quite frankly. I mean, but I just wondering how you see your relationship. Is there enough room for a little bit elbow room, or do you have to work in tandem? What's your perspective?
Andre Gontier, NorthStar. I think we can work with them. We would love to have them as a customer. I think we could, as far as the business model goes, there are opportunities to work with them as using their existing contracts for supply and do a tolling type model where we could really just take their supplies, liquefy them, and deliver them back to them. Or we can use the same model as I think others, where we could be the supplier from start to finish and have a turnkey and delivery.
Okay.
So we think right now we don't want to come in and say, hey, we want to take these guys off the map. We'd like to work with them. And our interest is for everyone to benefit here.
Edward Woods, Dresser Rand, and I'll add to that, if I may. We understand that Fairbanks is receiving a supply of LNG right now. That is in the consideration, but not in the consideration. What we're looking at is supporting and facilitating the expansion, phase one, phase two expansion of Fairbanks natural gas. They have a supply agreement in place already. They have a source. What we're offering is additional capacity, additional capability, so Fairbanks natural gas can expand their customer base within that community. The pipe is in the ground. They're ready to make connections. and I say that based on communication I've had today, and I hope I'm accurate. So with that, we can support the expansion of that gas network, connections within the Fairbanks gas network, helping bring down the emissions that are plaguing that area, as well as provide a very competitive natural gas and for that community.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the Chair. just very briefly, so the principal for East-West PAC, former Mayor of Houston, Roger Purcell, called me one day, and he asked me if I'd go meet with him and to hear a gas project. And, you know, I'll be honest, when I heard that, we've heard 1,000 different variations of gas projects. So we met, and we began to speak and talk about it, and I said, what's it going to cost the state? Because that's where it goes. And he said, nothing. And I said, okay. What's it going to cost the state? And he said, nothing. And I said, all right, I'll ask a few more questions, and I'll go back to this. And the whole conversation, finally he said, I know it's hard to believe, but this is one of these projects that it's not going to cost the state, which is rare. And so we began to talk, and we talked about the ISO shipping containers that they use in Japan have for 30 years. And the concept became even more intriguing in that you're taking gas from Cook Inlet if you can purchase it. The gas does not have the 12% CO2 as the gas on the slope, so it's going to be cheaper. It's almost pure gas. Houston is not that far from the source of the gas, and it is a intersection with the railroad and the highway, and it is an industrial area. And then the concept of the tubes, if anyone has dealt with propane, my understanding is the idea is you can ship this up to Indiana, for example, put it on barges and go down to some of the villages. I have yet to get clear on the boiling off and usage, how long those containers or how long that would last before you have to ship those out. But also what was interesting was if we did have a large diameter gas pipeline, and if this was very functional and practical, you may not necessarily need certain takeouts, which could lower your cost for that pipeline and increase your revenue shipping it overseas. So you could have kind of a two LNG or two gas concept going on in the state, one coming north from Cook Inlet, which is brought on the train and by truck, and the other going directly south for export. And in the end, there's no cost to this concept here, and maybe lower cost for the larger pipeline, giving us more revenue. But the idea of shipping these containers, going to North Pole with a container, instead of necessarily building out pipe all the way from Fairbanks, taking containers down the Delta, shipping them out to Valdez, it just was very intriguing. But like I said, I kept going back to the no cost. I remember driving away from that meeting saying it's kind of hard to believe. So that's why I contacted you, and I just want to thank you very much for allowing these folks to present something that may, in fact, be no cost to the state of Alaska.
Yes, Senator Hughes.
Yes, and thank you. Appreciate your presentation, and we did chat a little earlier, but I think it's just an important thing for you to talk a little bit about, in addition, you mentioned besides Fairbanks and around the rest of the state, what you might envision and what might pencil out is how much, what percentage you think might be going to Fairbanks as opposed to what percentage might be available for communities throughout the state.
Edward Woods, Dresser Rand. And if I may address Mr. Dunleavy's earlier comments first, we do have a term for moving the LNG out to communities, and we call that the virtual pipeline. And that is actually a method to help communities expand their gas network. And relative to propane and the value that LNG offers over propane, and this is especially important in the interior, propane boils at minus 25 degrees F. And above minus 25 degrees F, one is able to get gas off and use that for heat, for cooking, and so forth. But what happens if the temperatures are lower than that? One has to have supplemental heating on that propane tank to get it to warm up so it'll boil so you get gas, or you go cold, or you go without cooking. So that's a quick summary on that. Relative to the utilization of the facilities as proposed for Fairbanks versus the rest of the state, as I stated earlier, the capacity of the LNGO system is 30,000 gallons a day per unit. And with that, Fairbanks in their stated phase one expansion is 1 billion cubic feet per year. and that translates into approximately 30,000 gallons per day. So we would look at one system being dedicated to supporting Fairbanks, call it a base load, if you will, or an anchor tenant. And then with that, we would have a second unit that would be dedicated to supporting the rest of the community of Alaska, mines, villages, communities, and so forth. And there would be seasonal swings, so there may be some up and down or side by side relative to the utilization of those systems. And probably further into the discussion, we look and we say, okay, we're going to have a base demand in Fairbanks, and we're going to look at that rail corridor, and we're going to go out 200 miles out beyond that rail corridor by road. Let's call that Zone 1. That's easy access, relatively easy to develop, year-round loads where we can take care of those communities. And getting that LNG down to the ports and distributing out by vessel out to the remote communities, say 300 miles out past Kodiak to the south, or to the west, if you will, and 300 miles out to the west, supporting those coastal communities and industrial operations. And then there's the issue of taking care of those iced-in communities, Bethel, Nome, and others. Now, that's a business strategy of how do we work with those communities when they're iced in? Is that building a storage tank there? Is that storing ISO containers? We're still modeling through that right now. I don't have an answer directly for you right now, but every effort will be made to get LNG out to those customers and help support the displacement of diesel as well.
Follow-up, Senator Hughes.
Thank you. It's actually it's another question, but it came up in my office, and former Mayor of Houston, Roger Purcell, if you mentioned one of these units, and the pages aren't numbered, but it's the one that talks about schools, clinics, heating, cooking, that slide. These units, you believe there's a building in Wasilla where maybe I'm wrong, but where you were talking about the monthly cost, and since you've changed out the system, the savings that you were realizing on utility bills. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, Roger Purcell. I represent East-West Pacific Consulting. Yeah, this is and Kenneth Cotton, who actually owns the building, and it's a Yanmar 35 cogeneration power plant. We installed one approximately 7 months ago, put it all in, and we went down from a high cost of almost $4,500 a month in electrical to $201 last month during our high time of that. And it produces not just the electricity, which we dropped to less than 8 cents a kilowatt hour, we were paying 19 cents, but we also turned around, we have approximately 200 gallons per minute of 190-degree water coming out of it. So what we did is we implemented a system to reheat the whole building. So now we heat the building with the excess water, which we were talking about before, off the type of areas. So the building is heating. So our cost of energy for manufacturing it did not go up substantially enough to make a difference because of the great loss that we did, the decrease of the actual electricity. So we have that one in Wasilla running. It's proving itself. It lasted the whole winter, which we know is 20% colder this year than in previous years. It's ran the whole winter without any hiccups whatsoever. We also have this in Yakutat, two systems up there that's actually running off propane. And again, it went from, I believe, a 43 cents down to a 10 cents a kilowatt hour plus the heat. And that's been running over a year now in savings and that. So these machines that we're putting in, the cogeneration, have been tested. They are working real. And it has been looked at at a lot more different locations throughout the state. So with this type of project being put in, imagine your schools, your hospitals, your clinics. Now, if you can reduce that type of energy to those rural areas, or even in areas even in Matsu, like out towards Tenneke and Talkeetna and places like that, you could keep more teachers hired because you wouldn't be seeing all that energy cost.
Follow-up, Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was thinking while you were speaking, is that's one of our huge costs for educating our children, and I would love to see natural gas in communities in these units and in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Well, seeing none, thank you very much, gentlemen, for the presentation.
And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Good. So that concludes our meeting for today. Our next committee hearing will be on Monday, March 20th. We will take up the appointment of Henry Tiffany to the Big Game Commercial Services Board, as well as hear Senate Bill 58 from the administration. So at this time, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. The time is 4:10 p.m.